Radio Prague News.
Deals have been signed that clear the way for the election of a new government. Jan Kněžínek has been named Minister of Justice. And no nation in the EU is more strongly opposed to the euro than the Czechs. Representatives of ANO and the Social Democrats have signed a coalition deal between the two parties, a day before their joint minority government undergoes the necessary vote of confidence in the lower house. Also on Tuesday, ANO and the Communist Party put their signatures to a deal under which the latter have agreed to tolerate the new government. Opposition parties have criticised the head of ANO, Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, for allowing the communists to have a share of power for the first time since the Velvet Revolution in 1989. They say a different government could have been formed if Mr. Babiš, who's facing criminal charges, had stood aside. All parties but ANO, the Social Democrats and the Communists, say they'll vote against the new coalition when it undergoes a confidence vote in the lower house on Tuesday. President Miloš Zeman appointed Jan Kněžínek as Minister of Justice on Tuesday afternoon. He was nominated to the post by Prime Minister Andrej Babiš of ANO. Mr. Kněžínek has hitherto served as Deputy Chairman of the government's Legislative Council. The news comes a day after ANO appointment Tatiana Mala said she was quitting as Minister of Justice after less than a fortnight in the post. She'd been accused of plagiarising part of her university thesis. President Miloš Zeman has appointed 40 new judges, nominated by a former Minister of Justice, Robert Pelikán. In a ceremony at Prague Castle, the head of state told the judges that while ministers came and went, the court system remained. Mr. Zeman also warned the judges against journalists, who he described as wasps. The coalition of ANO and the Social Democrats will not support a proposed constitutional amendment under which marriage would only be permitted between men and women, Czech TV reported after a government meeting on Tuesday morning. The legislation was put forward by an MP for the Christian Democrats and has support from over 30 deputies from six parties. Another bill is set to go before Parliament allowing for marriage between people of the same sex. It also has cross-party support, enjoying the backing of around 45 MPs in the 200-seat lower house. Czechs are the biggest opponents of the euro in the European Union, suggests the latest Eurobarometer survey quoted by Czech TV. Some 73% of Czech respondents in the poll said they were against the common European currency. In 2005, a year after the Czech Republic joined the EU, some 63% of Czechs were in favour of the euro. Last year, the most recent date for which figures are available, that had fallen to 22%. And finally, a look at the weather. Wednesday should see rain and some bright spells in the Czech Republic, with temperatures of up to 20 degrees Celsius expected. Daytime highs should climb to the mid-20s by the weekend, which is said to be mainly fair. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, Prime Minister Babiš has nominated constitutional law professor to replace suspected plagiarist as justice minister. We have a report from the Harley-Davidson days that recently took place in Prague. And later we speak to Radek Mikuláš, one of the authors of An Unusual Guide to the Wild Nature of Prague. All that coming up, so please stay with us. In the wake of Justice Minister Tatiana Mala's sudden resignation over allegations of plagiarism, coming just 2 days ahead of a scheduled confidence vote in the new government, Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has nominated constitutional law professor Jan Kněžínek to fill her shoes, following an outcry after he first suggested he would take over the post himself. Brian Kennedy has more.
Prime Minister Andrej Babiš's suggestion that he could temporarily take on the role of justice minister was met with outrage and derision by opposition leaders on Monday. It would be farcical for Mr. Babiš, who could be facing a lengthy prison sentence over his alleged role in an EU subsidy fraud, to lead the justice ministry, they argued. With his nomination of Charles University Professor Jan Knezinek, a member of the Legislative Council who has investigated illegal conduct by high-ranking government members, Mr. Babish no doubt hopes to take political heat off ahead of Wednesday's confidence vote, his second attempt to form a viable government. But the Prime Minister insisted that he had withdrawn his own name, not in response to questions of judicial independence, but to put an end to at least one campaign against him, a reference to the EU subsidy fraud charges that he claims are baseless and politically motivated.
Everyone knows what led me to do this, so I wouldn't have to listen to this stupid nonsense from the opposition and on Twitter. Everyone knows perfectly well that today we have independent state prosecutors and police, which have ordered an investigation into my pseudo-affair that's also absolutely independent. So I don't need another campaign. That's why I decided to suggest to the president someone other than myself and who is not a minister.
The outgoing justice minister, who denies plagiarizing sections of her theses, stepped down on Monday saying she wished to spare Mr. Babish's Anno movement further harm brought about what she is also calling a smear campaign. The irony is that long before evidence came to light of her alleged academic transgressions, it was Ms. Mala's ethical judgment, even more than her professional qualifications, that had come into question, this due to her position on the criminal case against Mr. Babish. While still a candidate for the post of Justice Minister, which in the end Ms. Mala will have held for less than 2 weeks, she had argued her fellow MPs should hold off on stripping Mr. Babish of parliamentary immunity so he could face prosecution at least until after the next elections. That drew ridicule from opposition figures and media commentators who charged Ms. Mala either had put her loyalty to the Anno party leader above the principle of equality before the law or doesn't believe in it. Whatever the case, Prime Minister Babish's cabinet, cobbled together 9 months after his party won the election, following the Social Democrats' reluctant decision to enter a coalition government with him, is still short one minister. His Social Democrat counterpart, Jan Hamáček, is now both Interior Minister and Acting Foreign Minister. This because President Miloš Zeman had refused to appoint the party's nominee to the post, Miroslav Poche, despite being bound to do so by law. That may be a question for the Constitutional Court, and perhaps one that Professor Jan Knezinek, the Justice Minister nominee, would be wise not to comment on before seeking the President's approval.
Brian Kennedy with that report. Harley-Davidson celebrated its 115th anniversary last weekend, bringing motorcycle enthusiasts to Prague from all corners of the globe. Some 110,000 people flooded into the city's Holešovice neighbourhood for the festivities, fully 10% more than expected. Morgan Child visited the anniversary headquarters at Prague's Výstaviště to find out what brought this gigantic society together from all over the world.
I'm in Prague 7 in Holešovice in front of Veletržný palác, and while it's a holiday weekend, it's Saturday, July 7th, here in Prague 7 things are pretty crazy. It's the 115th anniversary of Harley-Davidson and people have flocked to Prague for the festivities. You can hear there are bikers returning from the big parade across the city. They're driving up to the exhibition grounds, and I'm going to go over there and talk to some of them.
Residents of Prague 7 received free entrance to the anniversary, and in the environs of the exhibition grounds in Holešovice, it was easy to see why. Some 110,000 people flooded into the neighborhood, 10% more than expected. I wanted to know what it was about Harley-Davidson that brought this gigantic society together from all over the world. Shams Kazi, who came with a group of 18 all the way from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, had this to say about the camaraderie of the event.
It's a lifestyle. You get to meet new people, make a group of friends, travel all over the world. Wherever you go on a Harley, you get a smile from strangers. It's just amazing, you know. Especially in our times, you know, you need something like that.
Do you feel a sense of community here? It's a ton of people.
Yes, very friendly. Everybody's smiling, coming, tapping us up, you know, like when they see the chapter that were from Saudi, and they're so happy that we came over.
Many riders boasted leather vests emblazoned with acronyms like HOG, Harley Owners Group, and LOH, the Ladies of Harley. Sheetal Shah, a dentist from India, introduced me to a few more.
Our whole community is bonded into a group all over India, and we meet regularly. We have four different rallies in India. It starts as the IHR, Indian Hog Rally at Goa, and then it's EHR, Eastern Hog Rally, Western Hog Rally, Northern Hog Rally, and Southern Hog Rally at all different corners of India. And the community, around 800 to 1,000 riders, they get together every time.
Neil Farley from the group 1066, named for the Battle of Hastings, said that his British cohorts were particularly excited to be attending the anniversary this July, while they could also catch the World Cup at night. He admitted to being a brand loyalist after 40 years of riding Harleys.
The bikes are beautiful. They look very pretty. They're just so unusual, you know, compared to the modern bikes, which all look very similar. Difficult to distinguish a Honda from a Kawasaki. You can see a Harley down the street. You know it's a Harley, you know? And that's what makes them outrageously beautiful.
Farley repeated what the others had told me, that a sense of community brings riders like him together from all over the world, and that enthusiasm inspires them to get on the road for other official Harley-Davidson events. Here's Sheetal Shah again.
The Hog Brotherhood, it's the strongest bonding in the world. Like everyone is busy in their life, morning to night. Like I'm a surgeon, I do dental surgeries and patients all day. And on the weekends, when you sit on your Harley and you ride, now you fly like you are with the wings, and you get a feeling of satisfaction and something. That is something which is very good.
Morgan Charles with that report from the Harley-Davidson days. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. With the tourist season in full swing, Prague is swarming with visitors admiring its historical sites and monuments, but the city has more to offer than just its culture and history. A few years ago, the Academia Publishing House released a rather unusual guide of the capital. Entitled Divoká příroda Prahy, or The Wild Nature of Prague, it offers a completely different perspective on the city, as seen through the eyes of two passionate naturalists. When I met with one of the guidebook's authors, Radek Mikuláš, I first asked him to define the term wild nature.
It's a nature that develops spontaneously, without human intentions. It can happen on mountains, it can happen on rocks, but it can also happen in the city. And it happens much more often than usual people presume.
You are a geologist by profession. What led you to write this unusual guide?
During my geological research on walks in Prague, just for refreshing, I found a lot of plants and a lot of fascinating pieces of nature, and I wanted to understand that. I asked my colleagues botanists for such a book, and they told me that nothing like it exists. There are essays, there are some scientific papers on it, but there is nothing for usual people who live in such nature. So I began to pursue Jiří Sádlo, who is a renowned botanist, to write that book. But Jiří Sádlo didn't agree, and he contacted me with Jan Albert Šturma as a possible co-author. But Albert was not willing to write the whole book. So finally I agreed to learn something more about the plants in the city and to join as a co-author of texts and also author of all the photos which are in the book, because Albert, the co-author, didn't make so much photos, but he has perfect drawings.
And the drawings are also included in the book, a few of them.
Yes.
What is the aim of your guide? What's the main purpose of the book?
Well, to show the people who noticed this nature in the city, to give them an explanation. What do they see and what's the perspective of that, and whether there are some rare species or whether it's all common, whether they came from different continents or how did they spread on train lines. It's a common way of spreading of neophytes, of new vegetation, and so on. So either to explain or just to show the nature to people who don't pay attention to that.
At the beginning of your book, there is a small map with the most interesting points worth seeing, and then they are described in greater details in individual chapters. How did you classify the different types of landscapes or wild landscapes in Prague?
Well, first there is a map where some 50 places are put and they are briefly described. And then some 20 of these places are described in a form of, say, personal talk or personal experience of either me or Albert or both of us if we were all together on the place. And the classification is given to some extent by the order of the chapters. Each chapter describes some specific settings, let us say Prague underground, it means canals or artificial caves or old mines and so on, which exist in Prague and still are inhabited by bats, let us say. So this is one of the level of classification. At the end of the book, there is also about 50 specific vegetation types. For example, there are savanna growth with bush grass, Calamagrostis epigeos, and staghorn sumac, Rus typhina. So these two plants make the base of the community. And there are also examples of, say, minor size. On pavement margins, there is a common purslane, also known as pigweed, which is eatable. I didn't try, but my co-author did and survived.
That's great to know. So in times of hunger, we know that there are edible...
It's a big benefit of the book, I guess. After the future collapse, it will be useful.
Actually, the very first chapter is written by you, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Wandering Through Prague's Primeval Forests. Are there really any remains of primeval forests in the Czech capital?
Well, there is no really primeval forest in Prague, but there is something which can easily be called a primary forest. Primeval forests usually are understood to continue from medieval and even older times of the human history. They should be untouched by human activity, human management. But in Prague, some forests developed spontaneously on the ruins of the city, on a place where the human intentions were lost. Ruins or abandoned parks or abandoned gardens. There are many possibilities. And once again, these places were covered by vegetation from zero, factually. And then this vegetation developed to a forest growth. So this is the primeval forest of Prague.
Talking about forests, one of the Prague forests that you mention is called Milichovsky High, but that has a slightly different history because, if I'm not mistaken, that was sort of artificially made when they were building one of Prague's biggest housing estates, Jižní Město, and they brought those mounds that were dug out, and on those artificial mounds they planted the forest.
You explained it more or less well. In the beginning of 1990s, it was concluded to make a so-called forestry restorations in this official language. But in practice, it meant that each bush or tree which was superfluous in garden center was probably taken and planted out on the dump in thousands of seedlings. And there are rare and nice and expensive varieties aside the most common ones, together with species which come from the surrounding settings. And nearly everything survives and is flourishing. It's a miracle, because if you make such a great collection of species on your garden, it would be probably pretty difficult to keep it. But there is no care in the Milichov dump, but still everything is vital and flourishing.
What's your explanation?
It's a good question and difficult one. Probably the combinations are so much unusual in comparison with normal nature that there is not so much competition.
You also authored another chapter called Prague, a Salt Lake City. What part of the city reminded you of that place?
10 years ago, I saw this great salt lake in Utah. And after that, some years, I found the water reservoir in Praha Hostivař, which is several kilometers long. And then it was emptied and desiccated. And on the bottom, There were deep cracks in the mud and thin salt crusts. So it is the similarity with the Great Salt Lake. And there was a strange mixture of plants with salt-preferring species. We found carcasses of large fish, Asian grass carp, about 1 meter long. And we found also shells of a tropical red-eared turtle, which doesn't appear normally in the nature of the Czech Republic, but probably terrarists or aquarists are unhappy because these animals eat a lot and they grow a lot. So they probably gave them freedom in the reservoir.
And then they actually survive in...
Survived many years probably. And the last information I got is that they even were able to breed. So it might be a great danger for fish because they eat fish eggs and they eat small, just breeded fish. So we will see.
You also mention places which are right in the center of Prague, such as Uhelný trh or Karlovo náměstí. What kind of imprints of wild nature can be found there?
It's chiefly a topic of my co-author, but Albert considers the paving of the Uhelný trh square, which is in the historic city center, to be continuously vegetated with disturbances, of course, but with the continuity for hundreds of years. Plants resistant to trampling, like thyme leaf, sandwort, can survive. There is a market, so there has always been a source of nutrients for plants and a lot of people as well.
At the end of your book, there are several supplements, and one of them is this chapter called Prague Nature as Seen from Trams. In this respect, what is actually your favorite tram line?
Probably number 17. It's a tram line that goes from the southern part of Prague in Modřany, then it crosses the city center and ends at Ládví, which is the northern margin of Prague. And these parts, like former fields in Modřany or old limestone quarries at Bráník, are places I know from my childhood. Then the tram crosses the center riverbank of the Vltava, and finally, at the north part of the city, the tram crosses steep slopes with remnants of maybe 80 years old colonial houses in Troja and Kobylisi. So it's not only botanic remnant of something old, but it's a social remnant.
What I like about your guide is that besides giving sort of detailed description of the different locations that you describe, it's also very poetic, and the individual chapters are divided by koans, by short stories or statements which are used in Zen practice. Who is the author of these koans? Who had this idea?
The koans were written by Albert Sturma before we started to work on the guidebook. It was one of the texts he gave me just to incorporate somehow to the material we have. The koan, as one text, it's not a description of botany, it's a description of emotions which a perceptive person can have face to face with bushes or plants of the city. So finally, I divided the text into a dozen shorter texts that divide the main chapters now.
Finally, as you point out at the beginning of your book, wilderness is in nature something that's sort of changing. And I wonder whether all the places that you have described in the book are actually still there, because, as you said, it's something that keeps changing and dying out and then appearing somewhere else.
Well, some places we described have already disappeared. An old factory in Sherbohory was broken and replaced by living houses now. Or the water reservoir with turtles was filled again with water. But on the other hand, as quickly the wild nature of the city disappears, it reappears on different place again.
Radek Mikuláš talking there about his unusual guide to Prague's wilderness. And that program, which was first broadcast in June 2015, brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.